You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Fenway Rundown. Chris Cotillo, my co-host, remains on vacation, so I fly solo, but in just a minute we'll be joined this week by Jim Duquette, former Major League General Manager with both the Orioles and Mets, and an analyst now with MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM, and a contributor to both Masson in Baltimore and SNY in New York, a native of Massachusetts, along with his cousin Dan from Dalton, Massachusetts. So we look forward to talking to Jim in just 1 minute. And a reminder that we have our Red Sox Insider text program that we invite you to join. It's an opportunity to stay current on all the Red Sox news of the offseason, right into spring training and throughout the regular season. You can text with me, with Chris Cotillo, with Chris Smith, and get all the answers that you need. If you're following the Red Sox, and all you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257 and then click the link to subscribe. You get a 14-day trial period, and it's just $4.99 per month after that. We'll be doing a mailbag episode later this week that includes questions from the Insider Text Program, so join us and take part. It's a Wednesday edition of the Fenway Rundown. As we noted, Chris Cotillo's on vacation, so I'm flying solo, but with the help today of proud son of Western Mass, former Mets and Orioles GM, and if you live in the Northeast, you could hardly avoid him on media, not that you should be trying to do so, MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM, with appearances on SNY in New York and Masson in Baltimore. We're thrilled to have Jim Duquette join us today. Jim, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me. I'm always looking forward to having conversation with another Bostonian. Even though I'm not really considered a Bostonian, I can play that part today.
Well, we'll let you join the club. No entrance fee. Jim, you and I were just talking before we got going and talking about what a strange and mostly inactive off season it's been so far. It's kind of been all or nothing, right? You get the biggest contract in the history of the game with Shohei Ohtani. You have a mega deal with Juan Soto changing teams from the Padres to the Yankees. A few free agent signings, but not a lot. It has been, even by recent baseball standards, it has been very slow this winter.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, right? I think especially since we were in Nashville there at the winter meetings, and you're hoping that all of this, signings and information that you hear prior to that, it's going to lead to a bunch of action there. We as an industry, spend millions of dollars to fly media members in there. We fly the whole front offices in there. I mean, I talked to teams that had 40 people there, 50 people there, and, you know, they treat it like an organization meeting. And then we had very, very little action. Thankfully, Ohtani, signed a week after that. But we had the Juan Soto trade at the end of it, when everybody was flying home. And it, I, you know, listen, we always talk about, you know, missed opportunities. That's a missed opportunity for the sport, right? But and it also brings up calls for maybe having a window, a signing window, like you have in other sports, to maybe we should have this signing window, you know, up until, you know, whatever, the holidays, and then put a break on it for a little bit. None of that's going to happen right now. It just speaks to how slow it's been. And like you said, with Yamamoto, that's the one that's holding everything up. If you didn't sign one of those starters to a one-year deal or a two-year deal, you know, the Jack Flaherty's, Seth Lugo has got 3 years, as we know, and Michael Wacha got two. You know, so it's kind of been a bottom-up, we'll call it, bottom-up signings, you know, from the starting pitching side. Outside of that, yeah, it's jammed up the rest of the market, and everyone's kind of sitting around waiting for these guys to sign. So if they don't get Yamamoto, or like they didn't get Ohtani, they can figure out what their next course of action is.
Why have we arrived at this point, Jim? What, I mean, when you were a GM, you know, the winter meetings were bustling. There would be dozens of free agent signings, some good sized trades. And every year it seems to go slower and slower. Some people have suggested, I mean, you'd look at how the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, free agency starts and it's craziness. And 80% of the big names are off the board in the first 6 hours. It's essentially done 72 hours in. Is the lack of a, not that I'm advocating for this, but is the lack of a salary cap a driver here where teams don't feel any urgency? Well, we've only got so much to spend and there's only so many spots. We got to move now. Why have we gotten to this point where the offseason is so slow moving?
Yeah, I think that that's part of it, you know, is because the sport doesn't have a salary cap, the out of the gate asks from the agents or from the player side seem to be a lot higher than what you would ordinarily think is appropriate to pay. And so, you know, from the GM side, you're like, well, I need to wait this market out. The only time you get lower prices is if you wait. And we've seen that almost historically, with a few exceptions. If you wait until January or February, the prices come down, players start to get antsy about what team they're going to be with, and the agents feel the pressure from the families. Hey, where am I going to be? So there's that kind of pressure that has happened over time where teams were willing to just wait it out. And they're like, listen, if I don't get this player, there's another player that is similar, maybe not that far off. We can pay him less money if we're just willing to wait. So I think that's a part of it. You know, the salary cap, as you mentioned, and, you know, I think that, too, that, you know, in some ways, the bar to get into the postseason now is lower, too. You know, we saw Arizona get in with 84 wins to get all the way to the World Series. And so your team doesn't have to be all that strong. You don't have to spend all of your money in the winter times. You know, if you win the winter, that doesn't mean, you know, the winter signing period doesn't mean anything when it comes to the wins and losses. So I think it's probably some of that too. As the calendar turns over to the next year, you look at your roster and you go, you know what, this option that we have internally is not so bad versus, you know, paying the extra $1 million on the free agent market. So I think it's like all of those things kind of combined, in my opinion.
What about the influence of analytics where, you know, 25 years ago, everyone had their own perspective. You have scouts, they differ on evaluations of players. Now so much is data driven. Everybody is essentially seeing the same numbers. They're not proprietary anymore. Nobody has a secret magical formula that the other 29 teams don't have. Is the reliance on analytics as the primary evaluation goal also slowing things down?
I think there's something to that too. You know, they see things similarly in terms of the valuations. You know, I think that is a lot to, you know, when you start to look at how teams value one win above replacement, right? You hear, you know, wins above replacements, the new term that, I don't know if it replaced on base percentage when I was in there in the front office, but it certainly feels that way. But, you know, it's more, you know, you can start to put values on what, you know, a contribution is and how you value it. And a lot of teams kind of use that as a barometer to spend. And so, yeah, I think that that has something to do with it. Listen, I'm not a basher of analytics. I think it's, even though we've seen a lot of the similar thinking, like even in the amateur draft, you used to see a real big separation of evaluations in the first couple of rounds. You know, if you ranked 100 players, when I was my last year as GM with the Orioles in 07, after 100 players on our board ranked, that would get us usually through the fourth round, you know, the fifth round of the draft. And then you're like, okay, now you're going to go by position. And now if you have 100 players ranked, you might see that might get you through rounds two or three. And this is an expanded draft now where you have more picks between first and second round and all. So they're going off the board quicker because of the analytics and the similarities and the evaluation. So, yeah, I think that there's a factor in the draft. I think it's factored into the free agent signing. I think it's factored into trades, too, which makes the trade market sometimes, you know, you're like, man, it's going to be an active trade market. And then you see kind of a dud deadline in July. And I think it's because of that too.
As you noted, Jim, it wasn't that long ago that you were in the front office making these kind of calls. We now have a player making $700 million. We know that some of that's deferred. That's not present day value. But looking back to your career, what was the biggest deal you gave out to a free agent? I'm guessing it was a tiny sliver of a percentage of that kind of deal. And is Ohtani's deal good or bad for the industry?
Yeah. So, well, the biggest deal, so I was this assistant. So when Omar Minaya took over for me, this was 05, we signed Carlos Beltran. That's a big deal at the time. It was about, I think it ended up being about $119 million. We deferred compensation, so the present value was less. By the way, Scott Boras never talked about present value versus the future value on that contract. He took the highest number. He was bashing the Ohtani number. It's still 700, you know, and you can promote it that way. But you know, so I think that that number at the time was one of the Beltran was one of the highest paid players in the sport that particular year, but you can see where the number. I mean, listen, I always feel like Trout's number was the one you had to match it, right? So if you were better than Trout, no one was at the time. Right. So that was a 422, I think he was, or 426 million, and he wasn't a free agent too. So with Ohtani going so far north of that, I think because of the two-way abilities, and I know there's question marks with the pitching, I feel like that's still going to be an anomaly, that $700 million. I mean, you know, and his international appeal and all the things that come with it. I can't imagine, you know, first off, another two-way player coming along like him. You know, it's going to be, you know, for, you know, a long time, I think. I said it at the time. I feel like this is a not just a generational player. He might be a lifetime player. We might only see the last one we saw was Babe Ruth. Now we have Ohtani. You and I are not going to be around for the time next time we get a quality two-way player. That's the way I view it.
What about the the notion that there were only a handful of teams in on the bidding, whether it be the Giants, the Blue Jays, maybe the Cubs a little bit. The stratification of the free agent class, where unlike other sports, you don't have more teams in on the big names. Does that continue to be an issue for the industry?
I think Major League Baseball has to keep a close eye on it. You know, there's always examples that we'll all point to. Major League Baseball will point to, like Tampa in particular, year in and year out. They have one of the lowest payrolls. You know, Cleveland has been pretty darn consistent in winning the division. You know, they've run a pretty low payroll. If you look at what the Orioles did, they were in the bottom five in payroll and they had 100 wins. So there's going to be exceptions. And I think there's that, going back to the, pressure of evaluating. If you do a good job in evaluating in the draft, you can stay relevant and stay competitive over a period of time. But there's that turnover at some point where you have to break it back down versus the bigger markets like in Boston and New York's and Philly and LA and Chicago, where you can outspend your mistakes, which I'm not a big fan of personally. And, you know, and that really that separation between the haves and the have nots, that conversation comes up a lot even now. So, you know, I feel like still the way the postseason is, you know, when you get in, you know, Arizona had a low payroll, like there are, whether it's by design or not, some remedies, you know, that you don't have to run up that big payroll. And it's kind of, I know that the large market clubs don't like it, but when the big guys lose in the first round and they've won 100 games after being set out, you know, there's that evenness, the even playing field that comes with the postseason that I think, at least for now, has mitigated that call for, you know, a salary cap or what. But I think it's coming. Like, there's owners that are, as you know, as far as we've been in the sport, owners call for the salary cap. Remember back a couple of times when we had player strikes, a big sticking point. And I think it might have been in the early 90s, 94, Jerry.
The 94, 95 strike was really all about the cap.
It was all about the cap, right? And so now we're like, oh, we'll never have a cap. We'll never have a cap. And now it starts every once in a while, it creeps up. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have, you know, some conversations along that here in the not so distant future.
A minute or so ago, Jim, you grouped the Red Sox with a bunch of big market teams. I think there are probably people listening to this podcast questioning whether the Red Sox belong in that group anymore. Yeah. They have been quiet so far this offseason. Their payroll has gone down the last couple of years. There is as I'm sure you know, living with ties to New England and doing a lot of work in New York, you hear the talk. Fans are frustrated beyond belief about the lack of action on the part of the Red Sox. What are you hearing, and how do you view them in the industry now?
Yeah. I mean, those are all good ones, right? So, you know, unfortunately, you know, when, you know, and I don't want to take away from Craig Breslow, I think he's going to be a good general manager. It is a growing period, as we all know, even when I went through it first time GM. So he's going to go through that there. But, you know, with the Red Sox, I mean, we know the fan base, the rabid fan base, when they're invested in the team, they like the team, they show up at the ballpark, they're watching it on Ness, and they're supporting it in all phases. And if they don't like your team, they let you know it. You know it from which you have to appreciate if you're you know, in the front office. But I'm not so sure the ownership has been paying attention to what's going on there. They are now, but over a period of time, I think there was a little bit of a neglect, or maybe they were looking at it from a more of a business side of things than they were, you know, the old altruistic side of things, like Bud Selig used to call the teams, you know, public trusts, right? I don't know if they were quite, maybe they lost their pathway there for a bit, because it wasn't that long ago they had the highest payroll, right? I mean, 18, 19, they were number one in the sport, right? So it was only 4 years ago. But as we know in baseball, 1 year in Boston or New York's like a dog year, right? Like it's a long year. And so I think the fans putting pressure on ownership to spend money is a good thing, but now they got to still be the highest bidder in some of these. And they haven't been, you know, outside of keeping Devers around. And that's my biggest concern, is they're almost turning like the San Francisco Giants right now. The Giants have been trying to get star players. They're not, you know, it looks like they're willing to spend the money. That is the difference between San Francisco and Boston. Like they're not showing restraint like Boston has, and they're still not coming. So it's hard to sign star players. And I think that's the thing that maybe the Boston ownership's overlooking.
Yeah. And I think you point out that you run the risk when you don't get grouped in with those big market teams, Mets, Yankees, Dodgers, that level. After a while, people stop thinking of you in those terms, and you've got to kind of make up ground. It used to be, and it wasn't that long ago, that if a top player became available either via trade or on the free agent market, people naturally expected the Red Sox to be players, whether it was A-Rod or Manny or Pedro, you know, they were star driven. Now Soto comes up, Red Sox are not in it. Ohtani comes up, Red Sox are not involved. They're trying to be involved on Yamamoto. How successful that's going to be, we're about to find out, but they seem to be more of a long shot behind the Mets, Yankees, and Dodgers. I think after a while, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're not involved with the big names, people stop thinking of you in that way.
I think it's a good point. And I do think that it has a ripple effect. You know, being fair, like this winter when they were looking for new GMs, there were a lot of them that turned down the opportunity to even interview there. And, you know, that, again, I can't remember the last period of time. You know, there might have been one candidate that said, no, it's not great. It's not right for me family-wise. But I'm talking about homegrown executives like Brandon Gomes and Sam Fuld that would
with New England come back. With New England ties. All right, like, Sam Fold's from New Hampshire. Right. Brandon Gomes is from Fall River. I mean, those would have been natural connections that would have only solidified their interest. Instead, it didn't seem to matter.
Right. And I would go back to my cousin when he took over there in Boston, he had to go to his owner and beg to get out of his contract to be the general manager of his hometown team. Like, he could not wait to basically bash down the door and say, listen, this is such an unusual situation. I want to run Boston, the Red Sox. And that was, you know, and obviously that was even before they won the World Series. So it has changed over that period of time, unfortunately. And, you know, I think that you do run that fear and you know, they can change it over a year or two, but it's going to take a little bit of time, I think, before you can, you know, before Boston becomes a destination spot again. So in our sport, it changes quickly. And I think we've seen that definitely in Boston.
There's a long way to go still this offseason. A lot can still happen. But given where things are, and obviously Yamamoto could tip the scale one way or the other in the coming days or weeks, the AL East is a competitive division. Three playoff teams each of the last couple of years. Four teams with winning records last season. Give us your overview of the division as it stands now, again, allowing for the fact that a lot can happen between now and opening day.
Well, it's going to be competitive again. Like, I don't think there's any doubt. We know the teams are going to spend money. Like, all of a sudden, the Yankees have a year where they don't get in the postseason. And this is, they're acting the way we all want Boston to act, which is they're all in on Soto. They're all in on Yamamoto. They're spending money. They're going to run their payroll up. Toronto was a finalist for Ohtani. Now, they're showing a little bit of restraint, it seems, even though they need offense, but they're going to get better. We know that. There's a lot of pressure up there since they haven't won a postseason game the last two seasons. But they've still been in the postseason 2 years in a row. We know how good Baltimore is. We just watched that. Yeah, it was a first-round exit, but, you know, they're going to be a force in the division over the next few years. Tampa, it looks like they're going to be. You know, they've had a ton of injuries. They've overcome them. You know, they always have payroll restrictions, but they figure out a way. You know, and then you have Boston, you know, and we don't talk about Boston like we do the other four teams. That's the truth until they start, bringing in more talent or spending more money. And, so I really feel like there is another, you know, those four teams right now look like they're going to, you know, be knocking each other around and competing for, you know, the 1, 2, 3, and 4 spot. And if Boston doesn't start doing some things, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of people like myself picking him to finish last in the division. And it hurts. It hurts me to do it because I want to see Boston up there. But I mean, that's the truth of the matter.
As we noted, Jim, you do a lot of work in New York for SNY. This is a unique scenario unfolding where you have the Mets and Yankees dueling checkbooks here for Yamamoto. They're not the only two. The Dodgers remain very much involved. The Giants, perhaps to a lesser degree. We mentioned the Red Sox. But this is really Hal Steinbrenner versus Steve Cohen for the first time. And it's not often that these two teams have focused in on the same free agent. What's that like in New York? And where do you see this outcome being with Yamamoto being the object of both the Mets and Yankees' desire?
Yeah, it's such a unique situation because when I was 15 years with the Mets, and during that period of time, anytime we felt like the Yankees were pursuing a free agent, we tended to back off. You know, Hideki Matsui was Mike Mussina, A-Rod, you know, like all those were out of the gate ones that we were, you know, I know Boston was in on Bernie Williams. We stayed away from Bernie Williams. You know, when we were pursuing Beltran, we were thankful the Yankees weren't really involved. We went after Kaz Matsui. You know, we didn't like doing trades with them, with the Yankees either across town, because if it didn't work out, then it had a X factor of like multiple 10, how the embarrassment you had to listen to from your fan base. So we didn't like doing business that way. Similarly to, you know, the Yankee Red Sox rivalry, where you're like, I'm not trading a player to that team. It's that team. It's not the Yankees. It's that team.
Right.
So I think, you know, now to see this, it's so unusual, and Steve Cohen's going to throw whatever money he needs to, but it still may not come down to the most money. I mean, it might be one of those where Yamamoto feels like, you know what, Tanaka was one of his favorite, you know, was idols growing up. You know, if the money's close, he may just sign with New York. He's got the pull of, you know, Ohtani in L.A. in that recruitment. You got Kodai Senga with the Mets, who they're supposedly friends with. Like, I don't know how to handicap it, but it seems like those are the three finalists. And, you know, listen, Yoshida and he are close too, apparently, you know, so I just don't know though if Boston's going to be willing to go to the numbers that it's going to take to sign him.
Jim, we want to thank you for your time today and your insight into things going on in the game and the Red Sox in particular. Hope that you have a terrific holiday season coming up and look forward to seeing you at the ballpark soon.
Yep, same. Thanks for having me on, John. I appreciate it.
Jim Duquette, thank you. And a reminder that we have our Red Sox Insider text program that we invite you to join. It's an opportunity to stay current on all the Red Sox news of the offseason, right into spring training and throughout the regular season. You can text with me, with Chris Cotillo, with Chris Smith, and get all the answers that you need. If you're following the Red Sox, and all you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257, and then click the link to subscribe. You get a 14-day trial period, and it's just $4.99 per month after that. We'll be doing a mailbag episode later this week that includes questions from the Insider Text Program, so join us and take part.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.